Hello, patrons. Welcome to the post discussion here for episode 7. Max, you didn't die.
I didn't die. That's it.
That's it. We'll see you next time.
Oh, thanks for coming.
Bye bye. That's the episode recap. No. Yeah, you didn't die.
Tune in next time to find out.
Although, can we celebrate? Because, like Adam said at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
If you would have actually rolled damage, technically you would have.
In an alternate universe where I was a more hard-ass DM, then yeah, you'd probably be dead.
Yeah.
Well, you don't know what the damage you would have rolled, and yeah, I would have probably.
You had like one hit point left, man.
Wasn't I one hit point? Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the thing, right? Like you're starting to figure out your it's hard to chase you down, right? Like being able to disengage, move, and then move again, or disengage, move, and do something else means that it's nearly impossible for me, unless the monster is incredibly fast or you walk into a different monster, to like chase you around.
I'm actually, I realize in that fight, it's very useful for me to just be able to like, peace, nah, shoot at you. And then they had come and try to attack. Peace, I'll shoot at you.
Plus, your crossbow does D8. Like, you do more damage inherently than my scimitar ever can.
Yeah.
Because my crossbow is strong and D6. The only thing you forego is that second attack if you're doing melee. You can still sneak attack and everything as long as the conditions are right.
So basically, I'm just going to load up on a shit ton of crossbow bolts.
Yeah, well, dual wield the crossbows, man.
You're going to be our Legolas.
Yeah, exactly. Well, mobility is your replacement for high armor class, right? Like for you, the way to survive isn't to stand toe to toe and fight; it's to just not be in a threatened square when it's my turn.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so that's good. Me and Baron still have to rely on high AC.
It would be nice to have high AC though, or at least not complete shit.
I mean, you can definitely get like plus one studded leather and plus two studded leather and bump your AC up.
Sure.
Just like we can get like
one, I think. Oh wait, no, you're saying on top of the stuff.
Yeah, I think Baron can eventually go full plate, right, Baron?
Yeah, I have heavy armor proficiency.
The only way that I'll ever increase mine is basically magical items that give plus one AC.
Should I just talk to the commander again and just be like, give me your best armor? Do it.
Do you have any magic rings?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. These poor people don't have any magic.
I think we talked about this at the start of the show, especially when we announced the show. Like, magical items are in this world, and they're not super common, obviously, but, they're out there.
They're around. Yeah,
we haven't fucking completed a quest. We haven't done shit yet in this fucking world, so that's why we haven't found one yet.
I think that's what we're trying to do right now, is just complete the goddamn quest, whatever this is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know. I feel like what we were doing is when you're playing an RPG and you first get to the new town, it's like, oh yeah, the kobolds. Yeah, it's a side quest. Okay, let's go do that. Oh, we didn't do that? Okay, well, you don't get your reward. We killed 14 of 18 kobolds, right?
Totally. Your quest log is full.
Yeah, we used to have a shit ton of fucking like half done quests and we came back to town. And then we found the main storyline and we're like, oh shit, this is actually like much more interesting than those fucking kobolds now. So let's go down that path.
But you're way under leveled for the main storyline.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe we'll go back and fight those kobolds. Yeah, we'll see.
That kobold cave probably has a mace of plus one kill shades instantly.
Yeah, probably. Probably. Totally. Yeah, or the fucking Patronus wand. Who knows?
I was traumatized from those rocks. I'm not going back.
It's true.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense normally when you get badly hurt to be like, nope, we're not going to throw ourselves into that thing that badly hurt us again. But
yeah,
it's interesting because D&D, it's a communal narrative, storytelling, hoo-ha, whatever, but it's also a game with rules and pacing mechanisms and shit. So, you can see there are ways to sort of sidestep that stuff. But I also think... I've been really impressed with the way y'all have been handling the like scary shadows, because they're intense. They deal a lot of damage.
Yeah,
and
they're
hard to fight, and they can hide easily. And y'all are doing a good job fighting them.
The dice were kind of on our side this time. There was two rounds where both me and Dan went unscathed, which was good.
Mm-hmm. So I rolled some pretty good damage too when I actually did land attacks.
Yeah.
The other thing too, like, and you took the experience hit on the fight, but like that fight with the shadows, with the acolyte and the guard, that
would have
been
a lot of damage.
Without them there would have been, it would have been unfair of me to dump that many shadows on you. But there was another priest who, if he hit, which he only hit like twice, but if he hit, it did double damage. So it balanced itself out in that.
It was nice actually. I think that's one of our first fights where we actually had like an okay. I don't know.
Ensemble.
We had numbers on our side, and that usually doesn't happen. Usually the numbers are completely against us, whether it be like swarmed by a bunch of kobolds or whatever. Usually it's just us three against the world, right? So it was kind of interesting to have like a little bit extra help.
Yeah.
Well, like the shadows are interesting. And this is the thing too, because like, I think we've talked about this before when we were talking about the monster manual and everything. Like, I don't mind the fact that this information is available to you guys. Like, you can just look up the shadows and find out information about them. But they're interesting to fight because they short circuit the normal combat we've been going through in a couple of interesting ways. Predominantly, for me, it's really hard to threaten your character because you have a high armor class, and your rage basically means if I do manage to get through the armor class, it's, I'm only dealing damage, like, two or three damage at a time. But being able to use a creature that does necrotic damage bypasses that, which has been interesting.
Right.
And then also, like you mentioned, Max, the fact that you're fighting less numbers and slightly more powerful creatures is a big deal.
Yeah.
It's interesting too, because we're seeing the dexterity barbarian thing pay off in spades fighting these things, because if you're a strength barb and you drop to 8 strength, your shit's all fucked up.
Yeah, your damage is ass.
Your damage is garbage, which you're able to avoid because Zephira is built to use finesse weapons.
Right? Yeah. The other thing too, I think a lot of people always throw at me is that if I was strength built, that I would be rolling a d12 on damage.
Yeah. But I mean, that's still super swingy, right? Like just adding a die type doesn't necessarily mean like you're going to want to add modifiers over bigger dice.
Right. And that's why it's nice being dex, is I always roll +4. So it's like the minimum damage I'll deal is 5, which is decent.
And it contributes to you're not getting hit, right? If you're a strength barbarian, you wouldn't have the same armor class that you
would. Right. And I think I'll probably hit 3, and then 3 to 4, I would, 4 you get feats. So 4 is also as almost big as a level as 3. But eventually I think I will multi-class into something.
Multi-class into fighter maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
The thing that's, there are points in the character arc that you can recognize if you've played 5e a couple of times where you're like, okay, either I take the multi-class now or I wait until the gap between 4 and 5, right? Yeah. It's 1 and 2 or 4 and 5 usually, because 2 to 3 means you get all your level 3 stuff and you don't want to bypass that and then be level 2 and 1 necessarily. And then same thing with 3 and 4, you get that feat and it's hard to justify adding on a new class there. But 4 to 5 is a good place to start as well. I think multiclassing is cool. It's complicated, but it's cool. You can do all kinds of neat stuff with it.
Yeah. Dan, what about Baron? Where's I feel like Baron's become the fucking powerhouse of our group, man. He's pumping out the damage lately.
Yeah, I was glad they're vulnerable to radiant damage. I was like, yes, I deal that.
Yeah. And Guiding Bolt's really strong, too. I think now that you've started to use Guiding Bolt more, I'm feeling more comfortable going into fights. Only because... like I always felt this way when I played a cleric. You write a very fine line of like, your party will be upset if you don't heal. Deal a lot of damage because we don't have a mage character in the group.
Against certain foes, especially in the last 2 episodes, because you're fighting something that's weak to radiant damage, it falls on the cleric to be that kind of long range bomber. But also, you never want to be in that position where your party looks to you to be like, cool, save us, and you're like, no spells.
I feel like they did a good job too in 5e where you have a lot of bonus action spells, like your, I think, is it healing word,
bonus action. I'm really looking forward to level 3 because then I get 4 level 1 spells and then 2 level 2 spells, which is,
that's a lot of spells.
Spell slot starved, it's hard to like justify using a spell slot. It's got to be a really important cast, and if I use too many of that, I can't bring it up Velimir, for example.
Yeah, I think also, too, in D&D, the spells get... And 5th edition, I think, is less of this because it's such a balanced edition. But, like, in 2, the jump from level 1 spells to level 2 spells are, like, astronomical. And level 2 to level 3 is, like, dumb. Like, at level 5, mages throw 66 fireballs.
Once you hit level 5, like, in older versions of D&D, and it's still true. Like there's a joke for wizards that level 2 spells are bullshit. No one can name a level 2 spell that's like really worth paying any attention.
Melf's
acid arrow.
Yeah, you do. Cool. You do 1d4 damage and 1d4 every round afterwards. Yeah.
But once you hit level 5, you're like lightning bolt, haste, fly, fireball. Like I'm a fucking actual wizard now.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's still true because of the way that the arc of spell progression goes. But yeah, it's instead of getting a bunch of flashy new abilities like the barbarian and the rogue will, Baron will get access to the next level of spells, and there is some good stuff at level 2.
Do you get animate dead? When is that 5?
That's later.
But
the really good spell I'm going to be getting is spiritual weapons, which will help with damage a lot because I can, as a bonus action, have this magic weapon that goes around and does radiant damage.
Oh, nice. You're basically going to be playing a prop paladin.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you're going to be a prop paladin. That'll be fun. And then, like, Max will get his. I feel like Max is going to go arcane for your rogue subclass. I feel like that just fits the character. Because you're already throwing fireballs and shit.
I'm going to have to do something. I need to add a little more something to him. Because right now he's okay, but he's not.
Well, also at 3, your sneak attack damage goes up, if I remember correctly. And sneak attack starts being real dumb when you start rolling 3d6 on every attack.
Well, keep in mind too that it jumps to 2d6, which means on crits it's 4d6, which means you're rolling... like just a bananas amount of dice.
Yeah, just absurdity numbers of damage, like 40 plus damage at level 3. Which is it's possible if you crit. We don't roll that well though on this show. It depends though. We rolled a couple 20s there. Like I rolled that 24 on the danger sense, which paid off in spades. Like that thing is so nice when your dex spec is a barb. Because I got advantage on that, and I wouldn't have. And I think the other roll was like a 5.
It sucked to just eat a poison arrow.
Yeah, just get fucking poisoned, and then we have to go figure out how to deal with poison, which would suck. All because the fucking thing was trapped, and it's a king and queen's fault. So,
that's right.
But yeah, I'm excited to see where the next episode goes, especially with the town. Like, I think we'll finish with the town on Tuesday. I think we'll be at least patrolling the town like we have been.
Yeah. At least the shadow problem will hopefully be
done. Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then maybe make way for the... Man. I don't know. Like, you guys, should we go finish up the kobold cave or... I don't know.
I think we should. Just get some of those goats and just run over there and finish it up.
Yeah, I mean, Max can get us back there in a day.
Yeah. It's only been a couple of days.
We get some more XP.
Yeah. Maybe take a guard or something.
Yeah,
I'm sure they're just going to be lining up to volunteer. Well,
we fucking saved the town, so like they're not going to be lining up. But I'll fucking say like, hey, the magistrate says, let's go, motherfucker. Let's fucking
roll on this cave. Yeah,
yeah. That was fun doing that in this episode. Like just walking up to people and be like, hey, I'm the magistrate. You're following me now, and they're just like, yep, let's go.
You're right.
It's funny to think if we hadn't gone back, the whole town could be dead. But when we got back,
I feel like that's what would have happened if we didn't come back from that kobold quest. That we would have showed up. It would have been like the first town we entered into where there's just fucking skeletons and shit running about, and it would have been a complete mess. So
a little different though, right? Because it would really just be like shadow beasts that are just
terrorizing everyone.
Shadow beasts are like getting the remnants of people.
Yeah, I wonder. Like, okay, let's do some quick. I'm not gonna be able to do the math, but let's think about what the math would be like on this. So
it'd be like around 1,000 fucking shadows.
Well, if three shadows came out of the page's body, right? Let's assume that they can get to another person within a few minutes. They kill that person relatively quickly, like within a minute or so. And then within 1 to 4 hours, that person spawns another shade. I wonder how long it would take using that math for the entire town of like 1,000 or so people to die and turn into shadows.
24 hours easily. Like,
well, they go into hiding during the day, so yeah, like within a few days, probably
2 days
like
for sure, and it'd be done.
Yeah, because they expand exponentially, right? For every one that's created, they can create more, and they just keep they keep spreading. Yeah, so
it would have been a nightmare. Yeah. I'm also interested to go. Like the biggest town that so far we've been is Sufangtin, and I feel like it's a big town, but I want to go to like a fucking metropolis.
Yeah,
and I want to go find a magic shop because. For me, the best memories in D&D is like just walking into a fucking magic shop and being like, hey, what do you sell, you fucking crazy wizard? And then he's like, well, we've got this. Oh, how much is that? It's 7,000 gold. I'm like, oh, well, that's pretty.
Like, credit.
Yeah, that stuff is cool to see in D&D. Because like Magical weapons are, I think, the fun part of D&D, that they exist in other games, right? But they don't exist to the extremities, I think, that maybe they do in D&D, where it's like, yeah, this is the fucking bag of holding. And if you jump inside there, you're in a fucking giant pit of nothingness, and it's really impossible to come out. And if you get two of those, you destroy the universe. Like, that shit still basically stands true. If you put a bag of holding and a bag of holding, I'm pretty sure the result is that the universe ends or some shit like that. At least it did back in 2E. So that was a lot of fun to just always tempt that.
I've actually, in Pathfinder, I used that. We were fighting, I mean, this sidebar, but we were fighting a red cap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was just not taking our damage because it's a different plane that it was from. So, like, damage was, like, doing nothing pretty much to it.
Yeah.
Sure. So we decided to suffocate it in a handy haversack.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. That's fun stuff.
That's how we got rid of it.
Yeah. Great. That's fun stuff. Belt of, like, giant strength, all that stuff is super fun. And I think the 5e DM handbook has some pretty cool magical items in it that are just kind of, like, stock stuff.
Yeah. Super beneficial. There's a really cool, I've been using, there's this really cool online treasure, like, generator, basically. So you just tell it the kind of treasure to generate, and then you click a button, and it just builds the treasure for you, which makes it really easy for me. You don't have to roll 1,000 times on a table. But, yeah, there's some really cool random stuff you can pick up as you
go. I do like the idea of the rolls, though. I like the idea of
rolling on random tables. It does all the rolling for you, but, like, watching that on stream is so tedious that, like, you find... Hold on. Okay. One second. Look on the gems table.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the gems table is annoying as fuck. I think for like a magical item, it'd be fun just to have roll. Like, if it's just like a flat 2D1000 or 1D1000 or something like that.
Speaking of magic items, have you ever played in a game where you encountered the deck of many things?
Yes.
Like one of those. The wand of wonder. Those things are nuts.
They put one in the Neil put one in the original show, and everyone knew what it was, so we never fucked with it. We just said nope.
That's a good call.
We're not touching that.
They can
end campaigns.
It's a campaign ender. It'll like literally like you could draw it and it'll be like you gain 5 levels, but it could also be like you draw it and you die instantly forever. Or like it's basically when the GM, you can tell the GM is bored of the campaign because they give you a deck of many things. They're like, I don't know. I don't care. Whatever. Just draw a card. We'll just fuck the whole campaign up. Cause it's like, you summon death and you have to fight it by yourself. And if you win, you get 10,000 gold. And if you lose, you die forever. And that's it. Make a new character.
Yeah.
It's very, very disorienting in that way. But if you treat the treasure rolls as written, you might just luck into one. It might just like happen.
I feel like if we saw one of those, that we would just be like, nope, we're leaving that here. Or we're burning it. We're going to burn this. I'm sorry. It's being burned. This is against the fucking gods.
So I thought, go ahead. Magic shop. What happens if we order the guy to give us as magistrates? Like, would that work?
Yeah, I mean that's up to Adam. I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean there would be protections in place for that stuff. Sure. I don't envision for the most part, like not the Court of Swords at least. Maybe in the Court of Wands, but in the Court of Swords there probably aren't just like Costco's for magic items.
Yeah, there's probably like relics and stuff within the Court of Swords.
You're more likely to find items that belonged to other people that fell into the hands of monsters you slay or you've discovered.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
But
what were we gonna say, Adam?
I was just gonna say that like magic items are actually, I think, not at early levels, but at later levels, they're super important to defining your character. And what I like to do with them is like even just a sword that's a +1 sword, even just a +1 suit of leather armor. You gotta remember, just like we talked about in this episode, like books, magic items don't get mass produced, right? No one is ever going to just be like, I could use a +1 sword. Let's go buy one from the store or let's just throw one together.
Right.
Even a +1 sword has a history and probably a name and like carries a weight so that, you know, you're walking around
with
your +1 sword.
Yeah,
totally. You're walking around with your +1 sword and some like scholar might come up to you and be like, is that Flame Tongue? Why? I know rumors of this sword. I've never thought it was real. You know, like you're becoming attached to parts of the world
right.
that predate your character because these magic items once crafted are nearly impossible to destroy and have like a reason. They were crafted to kill an ogre king or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what for me is fun about magic items, is being able to place them in the same way you do like towns or NPCs within the world, and give both the world and those items more context.
Yep. I agree. Yeah. I agree. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we need to discuss that happened in the episode.
The stranger, the traveler, what do we think about him? Anything else?
Oh, you mean Velimir's boyfriend?
Yeah. Yeah. Me and him got a thing going on.
I'm slightly annoyed by him only because I've run into characters of that nature, and I think Adam's playing him way for a reason. But at the same time, like, it's fun to also fuck with Adam in that sense, because I know how to fuck with that character. Like, basically saying, like, yeah, pull a card right now. Then Adam's answer is like, oh yeah, I just always pull this card. So like, I enjoy that type of interaction.
Totally. Yeah. That
stuff's a lot of fun.
Well, I think it's worth acknowledging that, like, yeah, that dude is a huge steaming trope. He's like a big, obvious, mysterious stranger guy. And I think we all know that, and the audience is watching it. And it's funny because on the one hand, like, yeah, that's a big cliche. They're like weird wanderer who's all mysterious and stuff. But also, like, he's just acting like every PC in every game has ever acted.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
He's just like you. But I think these tropes and stuff, they're around for a reason. People like seeing characters like that, and they also like seeing the kind of postmodern approach to them, to be like, yeah, we get it. You're a mysterious guy.
Yeah, that's why I was talking to him, like, yes, I know what you're going to say. You're mysterious. Great.
Yeah, there's a definite degree of like sort of self-awareness about the way we're all approaching that character, which I think makes it fun. Right. I think that's
important. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I agree. Then I think the RP was on point again. I feel like too, and maybe this is for another episode, but I think, and I experience this every so often. Luckily, I'm lucky enough to experience this playing with people that are like super, super good at role playing. And I think obviously you guys are getting there, but I do it all the time as well. I think I get lazy amongst a lot of people because they do it. And I was like, oh yeah, I walk over and do that. Like, it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to do that as your character. Like, yeah. I'm going like, and say everything in character rather. Like, I think that might be a goal that I want to strive for the show is like, everything we say is basically in character. I feel like you get so much more invested in your character too. And it's going to suck really bad when you die if we do that.
Oh, God,
because like when we played like Swan Song, I did Higgins and like, 90% of the show, I never was really not Higgins. Yeah, I even did the voice the entire time. And I got super attached to that character. But at the same time, the second, you know, someone got lazy and got tired on the show and was just kind of like, or just didn't do it, I was like, yeah, I walk over and pick up the key card and then I leave the room. Like, it's so much easier to say that, you know?
My thing is like, where's the balance between then? Are there no sidebar like conversations at all? And then does that affect how we play the game or?
Yeah, I think there is a fine line for sure. Like
it's funny because with D&D especially, it's a tactical handicap if you're not willing to talk about the rules of the game as players to each other.
Yeah.
Right. Being able to say like, all right, Dan, the spell you might want to use here is this because I'm thinking this is going to happen and then I'm going to use this ability. I'm like doing the kind of like football coach thing. If you make all your decisions in character, you are definitely like tactically handicapping yourself, but it can also be really immersive and fun to just be like, cool, I'm super angry. I'm just going to keep using my attack spells, even though I know I'm wasting them. Right. Like, even though I know I might need healing.
I feel like too, you could communicate that in character in a way that it might come off cheesy the first couple times you do it, but the more you do it, the better you're going to get, you know?
I'm definitely down to doing, you know, like more staying in character and more immersion and stuff like that. You could say I'm newer to role play in the sense of like the D&D
right
way of doing role play, right. But I'm not new to role play as far as like
characters.
For sure.
Basically,
you tell that's where I'm at. It's like if I see how it's done, you know what I mean, then I can just do that.
Well, I think it's more of a group decision rather than, because like I could stay in character all show, but it's gonna be really weird for me if I'm doing that and everyone's else like I go over and fucking hit that guy, right? Like, it's gotta be a group decision. So
if you did it, like, I would obviously respond in kind. I love being able to bounce off people, especially in character.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I love that.
I think it's trickier in a role-playing game because there is a degree of describing what your character is doing, right? Like you have to be like, my sword, I do this
thing. It has to be like a third person, like, all right, let's see what he, like, describe what you're doing, right?
One small thing that I do in every game that I run to both help myself think about the player's characters before the player and to like help the players think about this is that I address, like, I don't ask, okay, Max, what does Velimir do? I say, Velimir, what do you do? Like, I refer to all of you during the game, because then it's like, I'm not talking to you, Max. Talk back to me as Velimir. Think about Velimir. Don't think about Max. What is Velimir doing? And it's like a little thing, but on the player side, a lot of players will find what's more comfortable for them to either be like, I do this, or, you know, Baron picks up his hammer and walks across the room, right? Instead of being like, I pick up my hammer. And I find that as a player, I tend to go with the I one, even though it's can sometimes feel a little like weird.
Yeah. And I think too, for me, Max and Adam, we can all really speak to, and you do a little bit of voice inflection, Dan, I guess if we're just jumping into this, I feel like if you do a voice for your character, although it's going to be kind of weird after 7 episodes just to introduce a voice.
Yeah.
You buy into the idea that you're that character. It actually makes It you don't feel like that at all, but I find if I don't have like some sort of personality and like voice for a character, I get kind of bored with the character pretty quickly. And I think like Max has done that with Velimir. Like you're definitely a different.
Well, we talked about this in character creation, right, Max? Yeah, like you made up the voice first, and then we built the character around.
I come up with the voice based on what I think. Okay, so you said the world is, you know, like this kind of Asian or like East. What did you say? I can't think of it.
We started like Southeast. The Court of Swords is like Southeast Asia. Yeah.
Southeast Asia. That's what it was. And I'm like, okay, so what would be an interesting accent to hear? I immediately thought of Skyrim and how they kind of like, you know, Khajiit are, you know, in like whatever, you know, like my character, I knew he was going to be a rogue. I knew he was going to be kind of an outlander. So I was like, okay, we'll use that as inspiration for the voice and went from there. But definitely for me, like when it comes to getting into character, like I need something to go off of and spark, and then that lights the flame, and then I can
that could be incredibly daunting too. Like for when I start characters, the voice is the last thing for the most part, and I feel like if you go back watch the first couple episodes, like Zephira's all over the place with the voice for Zephira's everywhere. But like the past couple episodes, it's been it's getting closer and closer to where I actually think it like fits the character. I'm basically taking like the way that Max speaks and trying to make it more effeminate.
I guess more fair way to say where I get the voice from is like I come up with like what is this character about, like what are his themes, like where is he from, right? And then try to think of a voice that relates to that and would fit in that.
Sure. Yeah. Like a GMing trick that I do with NPCs is that like people don't like the audience, and that includes the players in a game, they're not going to be able to remember or care about any more than 3 things about any NPC. Like if I try to make up 17 exciting things about this character, they're only going to remember 3 of them. And so I pick the 3 things that are most important, and then I try to think of a voice for them. And the longer we play the game, the more I start to place accents. So I'm like, this character is from, we did this in Swan Song, where JP's character was from a planet and JP was doing a southern accent. So I was like, okay, he's from there. We meet an NPC that's also from there. I'm going to mimic his accent, and we're going to like establish the culture around that.
Right.
And it's a way to, once you've put that stake in there, like you noticed right away, Max, you were like, oh, that guy sounds kind of like me.
Mm-hmm.
So it placed him in the world and set him against you in a particular way. And, like JP was saying, that's it's a hard thing to do if you're sort of new to role playing and like coming up with an accent and being comfortable speaking.
It's also being comfortable and also being able to go into it easily is the hardest thing. And if you go back and watch the beginning of today's episode, usually before we start an episode, I'll like, if I'm going to get food, I'll be like, all right, I'm going to say these fucking sentences the way I would in character get into that. Watch the beginning of today's episode. I didn't say shit in that because fucking Scoots is over there, and that's going to be weird as hell if I'm talking that way. And then it was like super rough. And as soon as like Max started talking, I'd like start to fall back into it pretty easily. But the voice is not something that I can turn on like I can do with Higgins or like I can do with
That's where I just have an advantage of just being a weird kid who's done voices all his life.
I'm the same way. Like I before every episode of The West Marches, I would just like go for a walk and like just like say stuff in my head in my Dr. Grigori voice just to like get me warmed up on it. And then as soon as I sat down, I'm like, okay, it's time to go. Like it was already written.
And a lot of times with voices and characters, there's a phrase you can say that'll snap you right into the character.
Yeah. I need to figure something out for Zephyr as well.
And all that said, I think Dan, even though you don't have like a specific, really like, you know, distinct accent, there is a specific cadence and way.
You definitely have cadence to your character.
Yeah. And this is the thing that comes up. I have a DMing voice, right? Where I'm like, if I'm just talking casually, it's a normal like way I speak. But when I'm describing something, even if I'm not using an accent, I'm like, okay, this is Dungeon Master voice. I'm like making sure, you know, I'm DMing at you now. Dan, you have a way of speaking that you're like, I'm saying something is Baron now.
If I would describe it, and I think it's perfect for your character, and I think that's one of the best things you've done with your character, is his voice is like, it's warm. It's warm, it's inviting, it's calming. Like you're trying to like, you know, you're trying to really calm down whoever you're talking to and like make them trust you and you know, be open to you and I guess Temperance, you know?
Yeah, that's part of my design behind him is that he's very calm and quiet and relaxed. Like Temperance would be very methodical and thinking, and that reflects in how he speaks. It's my first time ever really doing full D&D campaign, so like
right
I'm a lot focused on like the mechanics and how am I going to role play and what am I going to say. I've been doing a lot of that, like doing taking advantage of the moments where you make me talk to NPCs and stuff and try to think about how I would say it as the character.
I was honestly hoping, and I kind of knew you wouldn't do it because it's actually a lot to do, but I was hoping that you were going to give the sermon in Zoom. Is Dan going to do this? I wonder if Dan's going to do this. Because like that's for me in the past, I've had to do that stuff and I've fucking failed horribly at it in terms of the actual like, you know, presentation of it from my end. And then I like crit the roll and I'm just like, well, I don't know how that fucking makes any sense, but it's still fun to do it that way. It takes a little bit of like pushing.
Yes. I think what I want to do, I'll often lead with the role. And then if it's like a middling role or whatever, I'll leave space. So if Dan, if you had just been like, cool, I'm ready, I'm gonna do this, I have some stuff, this is what I say, I would have totally just been like, cool, man, you tell me what your character says and we'll run with that. That'll become part of what the ritual is supposed to have been like. You can see an example of that happening in Swan Song where Jeff's character Alfarious is about to negotiate with an NPC and he throws the roll so hard, and I just knew Jeff was ready to spout like a bunch of bullshit. So I was like, all right, Jeff, how does your character fuck this up so bad? But the inverse, where it's like if your character does really well at something, or you like have to do it before you roll, and there might be that weird not linking up thing, especially early in the campaign and about a lore heavy thing, it can be super intimidating for the GM to just be like, I don't know, make some stuff up right now, do it, I dare you.
Yeah. And that's there's a lot of moments in this campaign still, even today's episode, where like, well, Adam, how does that, like, how do the fucking religious things work in this world, Adam? Have you thought about that at all? Most of the time you have, and the character is just kind of like, I don't know, we fucking burn some incense and shit and we move on about life.
Right, sure.
So, I think that the characters are coming along nicely. And I also want, for people listening in, it's not and I think Dan and Max and Adam know this, but that's not an attack. That's more just like, hey, we're doing a good job. I think maybe we could do this with the character, or maybe we could do a little bit more that way. Yeah,
I think. It's understood that whenever we have these discussions and these kind of like roundtable like wrap ups, the goal is to like analyze what we've done, what's good, what's bad, and then overall the goal is to just make the show better, make our characters better,
That's a thing that's fascinating about doing these post show things is that I don't think we've ever like self analyzed on a role play show this much. I don't think we've really ever.
It definitely happens like in the 30 seconds after an episode that people are like, well, that was a good episode, guys. Yep. All right. I'll see you later. And I never get to hear that because I'm doing stuff on the show. So sure, I never hear that at all. But it's good.
It's really cool to sit down and be like, all right, here's some stuff that happened during the episode. It's all still fresh in our minds. What did you guys like? What did you not like? Yeah. And normally I have to pick that up. And, you know, we'll talk about like really big important stuff, but the kind of moment to moment, session to session stuff, we don't really get a chance to decompress on. So it's been really valuable and really interesting for me. I'm always filing stuff away from these talks to.
And I'll be honest too, even me, like sometimes right before a show, maybe I'm not particularly right in that mood. like of like, oh god, or it's 4 hours. I mean, sometimes that can be daunting or whatever, but
right,
wrap ups, I haven't ended a show being like, god, that sucked. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I haven't either. I haven't either, for sure. So
yeah,
we could talk forever about this kind of
we
stuff.
We could, yeah, yeah. So yeah, we'll be back next Tuesday and do that that post thing. Me and Adam will live in a world where I don't have to stress about this live show anymore. So that'll be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a good universe. Good
luck. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that.
We'll see everybody there.
And then Adam can start stressing about TwitchCon. I can just be like, Adam, what have you prepared for us? So we'll get to that world next Tuesday, and we'll join you guys then for episode 8 of Court of Swords. We're out. Have a good one. Bye-bye.